Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, the government of Saskatchewan is providing $13.2 million to the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. That represents a $667,000 increase over last year. We'll hear from Dr. Jillian Muir, the dean of the college, as to what that money will mean for their program. On behalf of beef producers, the Canadian Cattle Association is cautiously optimistic that the federal government recognized the livestock tax deferral's effectiveness in providing relief for producers in the budget 2024 and recognized it as a crucial tool for producers in times of natural disasters such as droughts or floods. Jennifer Babcock, the Senior Director of Government and Public Affairs with the Canadian Cattle Association, will join us on today's program. And Saskatchewan farmers will have to adapt in the future to changing climate conditions. That's according to the director of a Saskatoon-based water institute. John Pomeroy is with Global Water Futures Observations, and he will be on today's program as well. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. The government of Saskatchewan is providing $13.2 million to the Western College of Veterinary Medicine in 2024-25, representing a $667,000 increase over last year. Dr. Jillian Muir is the dean of the college.
It means that we can continue to admit 25 students from Saskatchewan every year on an ongoing basis. So this is wonderful for us.
She explains how they were able to acquire the additional funding.
Well, we have been speaking with the province over the last few years, and the province did make a commitment, I think it was last year, to permanently increase the support for the college so that we can admit 25 students each year. And of course, this is still an ongoing commitment as we increase. Of course, the government needs to find new money every year until we have 25 students from Saskatchewan in every year of the program.
Muir says this will help alleviate the shortage of veterinarians in rural Saskatchewan.
Absolutely, and that's one of these five seats are these agriculture-focused seats. And so these are seats specifically designated for students who have experience and an interest in agriculture and agriculture and livestock production. We normally admit many, many students from Saskatchewan who have a rural background and have agriculture interests and agriculture experience, but these five seats just help us increase that number.
She adds that Manitoba and British Columbia are also increasing the number of training seats at the college in Saskatoon.
Absolutely, yeah. So Manitoba also added five seats on an ongoing basis, and those are these agriculture-focused seats. And as well, we've designated 15% of the seats for BC. So BC has six of these agriculture-focused seats for their student quota.
Muir says there's no room for any more international students.
Right now we're full. We don't have any room to admit any more international students. And so we're full right now. Yeah, busting at the seams.
She says they only accept 22 new students every year.
We usually have anywhere from 3 to 4 applicants for every spot that we've got, depending on the region and depending on the province.
Muir says the future is bright for the Western College of Veterinary Medicine.
We continue to have a very strong program in mixed animal and livestock animal practice. We are continuing that strength. We have more external rotations for our students who can go out and see what it's like in rural practice. And we're continuing to increase that for our senior students.
She adds it helps that most of the veterinarians in the field also attended the University of Saskatchewan.
Yeah, there's a very strong connection, and so we're often sending our students out to our alumni, and yes, there's a really strong connection there, and we put a lot of our students into training with our alum.
The Western College of Veterinary Medicine is an internationally recognized center for veterinary education, research, and clinical expertise that's located on the University of Saskatchewan campus in Saskatoon. Based on an interprovincial agreement with the three western provinces, the college annually accepts an allotted number of applicants from Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and British Columbia. Saskatchewan has a diverse livestock industry driven by cattle and hog production and is the second largest beef cattle herd in Canada, exporting $207 million worth of live cattle in 2023. A range of initiatives are enhancing the availability of veterinary services in rural Saskatchewan. The Saskatchewan Loan Forgiveness for Veterinarians and Veterinary Technologists program forgives up to $20,000 in Saskatchewan student loan debt for graduates who practice in rural and underserved areas. For more information about the Western College of Veterinary Medicine, simply visit their website at wcvm.usask.ca. It's time now for the AgriView portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, AgriView.
Another rail strike could be drawing near. Members of the Teamsters Canada Rail Conference, or TCRC, are in the middle of a strike vote. The vote comes after three collective agreements covering CN and CPKC engineers and conductors, as well as rail traffic controllers at CPKC, expired December 31st. The TCRC electronic strike vote began April 8th and will wrap up May 1st, meaning the earliest a strike or lockout can legally occur is May 22nd. While there's still some track ahead of the labor unrest, the grain sector is concerned it could be collateral damage in the dispute. Wade Sobkowicz, executive director of the Western Grain Elevator Association, says the risk is huge and that the stoppage will be absolute or near absolute for bulk grain movements. Major water users in southern Alberta have agreed to curb their consumption if there's a severe drought this spring or summer. Rebecca Schultz, the provincial environment minister, says it won't be known whether the agreements need to be acted upon until snowpack information comes in later this month. The Alberta government has announced water-sharing agreements covering four sub-basins, the Red Deer River, the Bow River, the main stream of the Old Man River, and the upper tributaries of the Old Man. Participating municipalities have agreed to cut their water consumption by between 5 and 10% if needed, and Schultz says some have begun doing so proactively. Alex Ostrop with the Alberta Irrigation Districts Association says farmers have had to make tough decisions about which crops to allocate water to in the short term, and many are looking to focus on higher value ones like potatoes and sugar beets, as opposed to grain. The development of Canada's biofuels sector was highlighted in the federal government's 2024 budget announced on Tuesday, but ethanol was notably absent from the list of renewable fuel categories that will receive support. The budget included a commitment of $776 million for a retooled clean fuels fund to drive production of renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel, and renewable natural gas, but ethanol was not mentioned. Renewable Industries Canada has issued a statement saying it has serious concern over the apparent exclusion of ethanol among the supported biofuel categories. The exclusion creates significant risk for Canada's biofuel sector, especially in Ontario, and could skew the market toward more imports. The group says Canada's biofuel incentives should be aligned with those in the U.S., to secure Canada's position in the growing clean fuel market. Domestic birds that live in and around barns have been confirmed as the avian hosts of an outbreak on dairy farms in the United States of highly pathogenic avian influenza. An April 16th update from the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service confirmed the avian host in this outbreak wasn't migratory birds, as has been common with confirmed North American outbreaks on domestic poultry farms, but rather pigeons, grackles, and blackbirds. Investigations are ongoing about the exact vectors taken by the virus that led to deaths in several barn cats, a mild infection in one Texas dairy employee, and either positive or presumed positive avian flu tests on dairy cows in 16 herds from six states. China's agriculture ministry says the country is set for another year of bumper harvest of grains and oilseeds, helped by expanded planting of winter wheat and rapeseed, and healthy growth of seedlings. The world's second biggest corn grower reported a record corn crop of 288.8 million metric tons last year, but continues to aim for larger output amid rising tensions with some trade partners, climate-related disasters, and military conflicts. China aims to boost grain production by 50 million metric tons by 2030, with a focus on soybeans and corn, although state media have reported production hitting a bottleneck. Good prices and government subsidies have encouraged farmers to expand winter wheat and rapeseed planting. These crops are usually harvested around April to May. And Sask Ag Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose Sask Ag Today. And yes, it is free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's cloudy and minus 2 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. On behalf of beef producers, the Canadian Cattle Association is cautiously optimistic that the federal government recognized the livestock tax deferral's effectiveness in providing relief for producers in the 2024 budget, and recognized it as a crucial tool for producers in times of natural disasters such as drought or floods. Jennifer Babcock, the Senior Director of Government and Public Affairs with the Canadian Cattle Association, has more of the organization's reaction to the budget.
We took part in the federal budget lockup on Tuesday. We weren't exactly sure what all to expect in the budget. And the first thing I searched for was the word livestock to see if we had the livestock tax deferral in there. And there was mention of the tax deferral, as well as the Canadian Cattle Association and continuing work with us there. So that gave us some hope. It didn't have all of our asks across the line in the budget. So we framed it as we're cautiously optimistic. You know, we have to keep working with the government and putting the pressure on to get our asks with livestock tax deferral across the line and to do it quickly. We don't want to see a consultation on this that's going to take multi-years. We are looking for some quick action. The livestock tax deferral has been an advocacy ask of the Canadian Cattle Association for many years now. So it is a positive indication that it has finally been mentioned in the federal budget. It has to have the Income Tax Act amended. So that's why we have been looking to push this within the budget. So on that side, we were cautiously optimistic. You know, we need to wait to see what the meaningful changes are going to be to the tax deferral to make sure that it makes sense for producers and it actually works for producers and the real-time needs that we have when we are across the country, different weather risks happening, you know, whether it's flood or fires or drought, and knowing the type of season that we're about to come into again this year, we did put a lot of pressure on the government to see livestock tax deferral in there for budget 24. So in that sense, we are hopeful to continue to put on pressure on this front and see some meaningful change.
Babcock notes that while there were highlights, she also outlined some of the disappointments from the 2024 federal budget.
The There were definitely some disappointments as well. I mean, throughout the entire budget document, agriculture is mentioned only 6 times. It is not, that gives us the indication that on the whole, agriculture was not seen as the, was not given, agriculture was not given the recognition that it should for being an economic driver, not only for rural Canada, but for the entire Canadian economy. With agriculture and the entire sector employing 1 in 7 Canadians, it is a key economic driver and should be given a lot more recognition than it has been this year and in previous budgets as well. Particularly, there was nothing notable on trade or trade infrastructure that would support Canadian agriculture exports. And with 90% of Canadian agriculture being export-driven within the cattle sector, 50% of beef production goes to export markets. Trade is a key driver for us to be able to continue to grow and meet that economic potential that agriculture is part of. Another piece that we were disappointed that the importance of grasslands was not mentioned. We've been working with a lot of stakeholders to make sure the government in Ottawa understands the importance to conserve grasslands across Canada. And we want to make sure that cattle producers are given the recognition that they deserve for their role in conserving grasslands and all the environmental benefits that come along with that. And if we want to ensure to keep these grasslands intact and they can continue to have the environmental benefits, we need to make sure that beef farmers and ranchers are compensated accordingly and given the recognition they deserve so that they can continue to keep those grasslands going. So that was an area that we thought could have been a lot stronger. There wasn't really any indication about working with us on grassland conservation. So disappointed, but it is an area that we will continue to work with the government to make sure that ranchers and beef farmers are given the recognition that they deserve when it comes to environmental stewardship.
That's Jennifer Babcock, the Senior Director of Government and Public Affairs with the Canadian Cattle Association. It's time now for the livestock market conditions and their presentation of Heartland Livestock in Verdun.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 175.67 today. That's up 30. August live cattle closed at 173.55, up 2. May feeder cattle closed at 242 even, down 55. August feeder cattle closed at 253.50, down 80. May lean hogs closed at 96.22, up 150. June lean hogs closed at 104.82, up 212. And that's the livestock market conditions. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. Saskatchewan farmers will have to adapt in the future to changing climate conditions, and that's according to the director of a Saskatoon-based water institute. John Pomeroy is with Global Water Futures Observations, which has a network of 5 dozen freshwater monitoring and observation stations placed strategically across the country. Pomeroy believes the biggest changes ahead are rising temperatures and changing precipitation patterns.
Absolutely warmer, particularly in summer and in midwinter, less so in spring and fall, and overall wetter, but with a potent qualification there. The increase in precipitation is mostly in the winter time and in the spring, with summers becoming quite a bit drier. So that's going to challenge agriculture in Saskatchewan quite a bit.
Pomeroy says 2023 may be an example of what could occur in the future.
We were about 5 degrees above normal in May and June throughout the prairies and the mountains. It gave us essentially an extra month of summer. that we didn't expect. And the drought was in short. We ran out of water before that summer was over, whether it was river flow or soil moisture in many parts of the province. So that tells us what we're doing right now won't work. We have to adapt to the situation.
That includes developing and growing more drought-resistant and earlier maturing crops.
So we need to think about crops that will thrive in those circumstances. We don't grow much winter wheat here right now, but maybe this will be a viable alternative for the future, just as one example. And also looking at crops that take advantage of that moisture early in the season and basically get through before the really hot, dry conditions occur.
Pomeroy says some locations in Saskatchewan already have less available water.
The Saskatchewan River Delta around Cumberland Hills hitting such low levels that muskrat populations plummeted virtually unobtainable. The community of Cumberland Hills had difficulty accessing drinking water over the winter, things like this. Leader Saskatchewan had difficulty accessing drinking water over this last winter. So we're seeing this now. We're seeing the water crisis in Saskatchewan. And I'm hoping the drought ends. This storm is giving me some hope, but we'll see more of it. So we have to be ready. And this, I hope and intend, will help us prepare for that.
John Pomeroy is the director of Global Water Futures Observation, which is monitoring freshwater supplies and river flows at strategic locations across Canada.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. May canola closed at $6.09.80. That's up $1.10. July canola closed at $6.22.80. That's up 50 cents. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.47 per bushel. That's up 8.25 cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.81.50, up 4.25 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at 13.5 cents. That is up 13.5 cents. May corn closed at 4.33.5, up 6.75 cents. May soybeans closed at 11.50.5. That's up 16.25 cents. May oats closed at 3.58.75, up 4 cents. And that's the commodities update. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. I'm Doug Falconer. Two or three generations ago, when large gardens were planted, it was important to know how to preserve food. Supply chains and large supermarkets have made it easier to buy fresh food, but as costs rise, a few consumers are preserving foods to save money. Martha Rogers is a certified master food preserver and was a guest on the Ask a Farmer podcast. She says there are many forms of food preservation.
We refrigerate things or we freeze food. That's food preservation. But there are many other methods. Fermentation is very popular these days. It's so healthy for you. We have dehydration, so dehydrating or drying of all kinds of foods. And then we have various types of canning.
On a basic level, there are two types of canning.
One approach is for high acid foods, and that includes fruits, most fruits, not melons and not figs, but most fruits. And any vegetable that has been acidified, such as you would do with pickles, for example, you add vinegar, so that makes it more acidic. Those types of fruits and vegetables can be safely canned using a water bath canner or an atmospheric steam canner.
The other type of canning is low acidic.
And that would include vegetables, meats, fish, poultry, and so on. But it requires a different approach to canning, and that involves pressure canning. So the temperature has to be raised to at least 240 degrees Fahrenheit in order to safely can foods that are low in acid. So that's the basic question. Are my products low acid? Am I doing low acid canning or am I doing high acid canning? So That's the fundamental question, I guess, to decide what approach to canning you're going to use.
Rogers says it's not always easy to determine if a food or combination of foods are acidic or low acidic.
If you're doing something like a relish or a salsa, you have a mixture of vegetables, so the complexity of determining acidity is much greater. And this is why we would strongly recommend not just Googling recipes to choose. You need to use a reputable source, because it's not just acidity, but the processing time in a test kitchen is determined using a thermocouple. So they put a probe into the jar to assess how long it takes for heat penetration to actually get into the jar. So if it's going to be different between a jar of jam or a jar of salsa.
Rogers says it's important to use canning recipes from a trusted source.
You need to use a recipe that is from a reputable source that's developed within a test kitchen over the last 20 years. Things like Test Kitchens of America, Canadian Living, where the recipes themselves have been actually developed in a test kitchen, where they determine the acidity level.
Test kitchens have made canning much easier than it was for your grandmother or great-grandmother, and Rogers provides an example of that.
Years ago, it was thought that all jars and lids had to be sterilized, and it was a big production for everybody to have to sterilize everything and then sterilize the lids before you even got to the canning process. But now, through all the research, it's been proven that if your processing time is 10 minutes or longer, you don't have to sterilize the jars. It makes things a whole heck of a lot easier. They have to be hot and warm to receive the hot jam, but they don't have to be sterilized.
Martha Rogers is a certified master food preserver. Her comments come from the Ask a Farmer podcast. You can listen to the entire program and find links to a variety of canning recipes by going to CanadianFoodFocus.org and clicking podcasts at the top of the page.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission is hosting its Summer Classic, that's AI in Agriculture, coming up on June 19th at Canada's Farm Show in Regina. This year's focus is on AI in agriculture. They'll have an update on Saskatchewan wheat activities and business from Board Chair Jake Legui, a delicious lunch provided, and two exciting and knowledgeable speakers to enjoy. The guest speakers are Dr. Steve Shurtleff, a professor at the University of Saskatchewan's College of Agriculture and Bioresources, as well as Walter Schwab with EchoPoint Corporation, and they'll be the two guest speakers for that event. It's all coming up on June 19th at the Canada Farm Show in Regina. You can go to the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission website in order to register for that event. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. And that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program.